station.
Welcome back to the Living Dead Minute, the daily podcast where we resurrect, revitalize, and reanimate George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, 1 minute at a time, in order. I am Rachel from the Savage Land podcast.
I'm Jason from the currently on hiatus That Might Be Cool podcast.
And I'm Matt from the not on hiatus Savage Land podcast.
Woo!
Woo! All right, this is minute 19. And this minute starts with Ben still struggling with Pee-wee Herman zombie there. And ends with Barbara just slowly walking, I'm assuming, towards Ben.
Oh, do you assume? Well, doesn't it? No, it's still in this minute where it shows what she's walking toward, right?
It does, yeah.
Is she walking towards dead zombie or Ben?
The dead zombie.
Dead zombie. And then she stops, horrified.
Yeah.
As she does with everything.
I think this is probably, you know, the first death that a lot of the critics were, when watching this, were probably like, oh, this movie's far too brutal. This movie's too intense, because he really grinds that tire iron into that thing's head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like, even by today's standard, I mean, well, I guess if you're looking at the horror genre itself, then it's not extreme, because horror movies now just love the sort of, you know, violence and whatever. But like, by most movie standards today, that's still a pretty intense sort of, you know, like gut-wrenching scene, I think.
Totally.
Yeah, and I don't like the sound that it makes. I don't know why that sound is kind of, yeah, makes me icky.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Even though you don't see anything.
Yeah. It's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it's
He really got violent on that one. Like, the other ones, he was shaking them around, you know, doing the old shakedown. This guy, he was like, nah.
He probably got, like, a rush of adrenaline last minute there.
Yeah.
Because he looks exhausted again afterwards.
Yeah, he's, like, slumping against the door and... Really,
yeah,
he looks
like you can tell that, yeah, you can tell that he's not into this.
I will say the makeup for that head wound, that's, I mean, again, especially for the time, that's a pretty good makeup job.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's quite impressed.
Looks real.
Yeah, it looks, maybe they just killed a guy.
They could have.
They might have.
I guess they could have.
That's guerrilla filmmaking right there. That's showbiz, baby. George Romero's just sitting in his director chair like, so what? It's showbiz. We're making a movie here. And he got a different accent than he normally has.
Apparently.
He's from Boston, okay? In this scenario.
I think this minute has one of my favorite scenes thus far, or maybe even throughout the whole thing, where it's the zombie in its pajamas comes in the front door, or a side door, the kitchen door.
All I could think was, and, Dad?
Dad? And... He kind of like rolls in, and you get the shot of him when Ben pushes him away. And as he exits the shot, there's you can see all the horde of zombies coming.
Yeah, I love that shot.
And I think that is just such a great way to say, you know, this is far from over, and in fact, it's going to get a whole lot worse.
Yeah, I thought that was a fantastic shot too. Like, what I loved about it was the contrast between like the darkness and the background and everything. Like, basically everything is pitch black except the zombies, so they stand out in just like stark contrast to the background.
Yeah, it's a cool shot. I love it.
Mm. I guess that is one of those things where it's like that type of shot would be hard to pull off today. With modern film, because it's a shot that you only get because the cameras aren't quite like sensitive enough to sort of catch all of the, you know, refracted light, and all they really catch is like, you know, whatever spotlight is like shining up at people. You know what I mean? Like, with today's cameras, like you don't get that shot at all, which I thought was just kind of interesting. But it was, I think we went back in this minute to the trope that's well established at this point of Barbara just kind of looking distressed and shocked at things.
She looks like the Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know. I mean, do you think they tried that hairdo on her before? Do you think they had a bunch of hair tests before they settled on her ultimate haircut?
Totally.
I'm sure they were just like, this looks good.
Yep. They're like, hey, This one is perfect.
Yep, this one looks good. Just do that.
They could have done the Bride of Frankenstein one. You never know. I mean, I think she could have nailed it.
Well, do you think the Bride of Frankenstein one would have gone good with that jacket she's wearing, her coat?
No.
Probably not.
They would have clashed.
I think that haircut clashes with any jacket.
Yeah, I don't know. It works with that coat. She's got a good coat on. I don't know why I think she has a nice coat.
It is a nice coat.
I like it.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. It's almost like her. It's like the female equivalent of like the coat that Constantine wears, John Constantine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's her signature coat.
Exactly. It's just like it's like she's not herself without that coat. God forbid anything happened to the coat.
Something's gonna happen to that coat.
Damn it.
Yep.
I was really holding out for that coat.
Well, here's something I noticed. The pajama zombie comes in the kitchen door. Ben smashes it with his tire iron, and it recoils in pain, or so it seems.
Yeah.
Which begs the question, do zombies feel pain?
That is a good question.
It looks like it, because he, you know, recoils back and grabs his face.
Yeah, if we're talking about this film, I think these zombies do feel, or these ghouls, rather, do feel pain. But then, you know, most modern interpretations of zombies don't seem to feel pain at all.
Right.
Hmm.
So is, yeah. I think you can make a pretty strong argument that while these may be considered the progenitors of zombie culture, they are absolutely not zombies as we know them.
Oh, not at all. And especially as we're recording this, it's kind of funny because George Romero the other day, as we're recording, was talking about how he thought that, that Brad Pitt and the World War Z adaptation and then The Walking Dead as well have kind of killed the sort of zombie genre. And so I think it is kind of timely to talk about that, kind of the difference between these, you know, ghouls or these sort of proto-zombies and what zombies have kind of become in later iterations.
Right.
Because, like, you watch The Walking Dead, and those zombies don't seem to feel any type of pain.
No, not at all.
Or walkers, I guess they call them. But then, like, I don't know, like in, let's see, Zombieland be about the same thing.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a recent zombie film where they felt pain.
Did they feel pain in World War Z? I didn't watch that one.
No.
No.
They just ran, like, crazy... squirrels.
Yeah, they acted more like flowing water instead of humans.
That's funny. That's funny. Sad but funny. did you guys have anything else for this year minute?
No, I just like it. This is the turning point where there's no coming back. There's no safety.
Yeah, this is kind of the moment, sort of the like. Yeah, the point of no return.
Yeah, there will be no quarter in this house.
Indeed. I'll keep you guys going with the 1968, and we're going to start off here with some fun little news, right?
Yay, fun news.
Fun news. May 29th, 1968, Manchester United wins the European Cup final and become the first English team to do so. So good news for England. You know, great stuff for the Brits right there. Great soccer history, you know.
Yep. Great job, guys.
Good job, England.
Yeah. You guys are soccer fans, right? We're all huge soccer heads, as they're called.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Or football for our for our listeners in the rest of the world. And then on May 30th, Bobby Unser wins the Indianapolis 500. So it's a big day for motorsports, following up the big day for soccer there. Bobby Unser, one of the great racing legends of all time. And the Unser family, really. I mean, their whole damn family is like racing legends. But Bobby Unser, go ahead.
They must have a song, right? Their song is Unser, 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 Unser.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But totally. Yeah, Bobby.
That may even be where Unser came from.
Probably. That's probably
they invented it.
Probably is where it came from. But that year he would win the championship, and then he would go on to win two more Indy 500s in his career, which is great news for him, right?
Good job.
Now we go into June, and I'm only going to give you one piece of news from June today.
Okay.
But this one's a bit of a bummer. June 1st, 1968, Helen Keller dies at the age of 87 years.
Oh, bummer.
Jeez.
Big old bummer. I know. I like ending it on a low note. You know what I mean? A lot of people start low and go high. I like to start high and then go low.
Yeah. I think that's great for listeners.
It's totally great.
It's just bum you out.
And on a low note. But yeah, I mean, obviously Helen Keller, a huge, icon in all sorts of ways. I mean, she's an activist and sort of a pioneer for kind of, understanding, I guess, for the differently abled. So I don't know, she's a legend. We all read about Helen Keller growing up and learn from her. And so I think it's interesting that, like, for me, I didn't realize that Helen Keller, died that long ago, because I think when we're raised in like the school system that we have, like, it's sort of Helen Keller's kind of ever present in a lot of the things that we learn, and so a lot of the time it just kind of feels a bit closer. I don't know, maybe that's just me. Am I off base on that as far as you guys are concerned?
Well, the thing about Helen Keller is that you only hear about her childhood in school, and you don't hear about the rest of her life. So she remains this figure who is, quite young. So she could sort of, to some degree, live in any time period, because you just don't know how old she was and how long she lived and what she did with her life when she was, when in fact she was a huge women's rights advocate and activist.
Yeah, totally. And she, in 87, especially back, like, dying in the year of 1968 at the age of 87, like, that's a hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah. I had no idea that she lived that long.
Yeah.
Cause again, you only learn about her childhood. So you just don't think of her being as an adult or an old lady.
No, not at all. Like, it's interesting. Like, especially for somebody who was differently able, like, it's not like, back when she was growing up, there were tons of accommodations for somebody who couldn't, hear, see, or talk, like
any at all.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's sort of, yeah.
And so it's like for somebody like that who has to overcome so many sort of like uphill battles, and obviously as strong as she was and as able as she was to do so, like to make it to 87 years old, when you were born in the 18th century, like, or 19th century, 1800s is what I meant by that. But yeah, I don't know. That's pretty remarkable, since most people in general didn't live to be that old. And so somebody who had so much stacked against her to kind of, win that battle and live to a very, very, for the time, like a very old age. That's pretty, pretty good.
Agreed.
So there, it's sort of a high note.
Yeah. See, I spun it. I gave it an M. Night Shyamalan twist.
What a twist.
Well, if that's all we've got, listeners, remember to send us your thoughts, either to, our email, which is, zombies@tldminute.com. It can be whatever you want it to be. Or you can, go on Twitter @TLDMinute, Instagram @TLDMinute, and Facebook @TLDMinute. Be sure to leave us those ratings and reviews. We love it when people are able to find us, so that will help them do so. But until tomorrow, which is a bright and happy Friday, we will see you next time on the Living Dead Minute. Back on. Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming back on the air after an interruption due to a technical problem. Nothing wrong with the radio. Must have been a station.